From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. It is a classic image, Captain Ahab from Herman Melville's Moby Dick, on the deck of a wooden ship searching for the white whale.
Mr. Starbuck, are you opposing me? If so, I'll have you know that there's one God that is Lord over the earth and one captain over the Pequod.
That's Gregory Peck as Ahab from the film version of Moby Dick. Ahab is famously monomaniacal, dedicated only to killing the white whale. But he may be a more modern character than his vintage would suggest. As part of our series, In Character, NPR's Larry Abramson explores a character he's learned to admire.
I'm standing on the deck of the Pequod, surrounded by my multicultural band of shipmates. We've been sailing for over 100 pages, with hardly a word from our supreme lord and dictator. That's what Ishmael calls him. The whole time, we've been talking about him, about Ahab, the mystery man with one name, christened after an evil biblical king. His decision to stay in his cabin all this time is sheer PR brilliance. The suspense is killing us, and the myth around Ahab grows more outrageous every day. Wait a minute, there he is, standing on the quarterdeck, his peg leg resting in the auger hole he uses to steady himself against the rolling of the ship.
What do you do when you see a whale, men?
Ahab's face is split down the middle. As Melville puts it, the scar resembles that perpendicular seam sometimes made in the straight, lofty trunk of a great tree when the upper lightning tearingly darts down it, leaving the tree still greenly alive but branded.
Sing after him! Ah!
Good. What do you do next?
Captain Ahab! Captain Ahab! He won't take questions from the crew, but man, he is a hell of a politician. Within minutes, he's enlisted nearly every single one of us in the hunt for not just any whale, a white whale named Moby Dick. I know it sounded ridiculous to me, but after Ahab passed around the grog a few times, Ishmael and I and everyone else signed up. The reward offer was icing on the cake.
Whosoever of ye finds me that white whale, ye shall have this Spanish gold ounce, my boy.
That, of course, is not Melville's Ahab. It's John Huston's, the director of that film. For us members of the crew, that film and the Ray Bradbury screenplay forged the public image of Ahab as a mindless Terminator, as a fanatic. In the film, when First Mate Starbuck asks,
Captain Ahab, was it not Moby Dick took off thy leg?
Aye. It was Moby Dick that tore my soul and body until they bled into each other.
Now, my Ahab, Melville's Ahab, responds more like this. Aye, it was Moby Dick that dismasted me. Moby Dick that brought me to this dead stump I stand on now. Aye, aye, he shouted with a terrific, loud animal sob, like that of a heart-stricken moose. Here's the human Ahab, the wounded Ahab, bent on revenge, haunted by the memory of the wife and child he left at home. Melville scholar, Professor Mary Burkaw Edwards, says when she teaches this book to her college students at the University of Connecticut, they don't think of him as evil at all.
They don't say that about Ahab. They do kind of fall for him. They see him as not just being a tyrant, and I think it's because of the humanity they see in him.
Humanity? How can you find humanity in a mass murderer who drags dozens of sailors down to Davy Jones' locker with him? That's been the reaction of many in the century and a half since Melville's epic came out, and the many characters with Ahab in their DNA haven't helped. It's hard not to love the movie Jaws. But as the ultimate Moby Dick knockoff, this movie's Ahab drinks a little too deep from the Ahabian spring for me. Like Ahab, Robert Shaw, as Quint, the crusty, shark-hating captain of the Orca, has an obsessive primal hatred that drives him on. In his case, Quint watched his fellow sailors get chewed up after the sinking of the USS Indianapolis during World War II.
You know the thing about a shark? He's got lifeless eyes. Black eyes, like a doll's eye. When he comes at you, doesn't seem to be living until he bites you, and those black eyes roll over white, and then, oh, then you hear that terrible high-pitched screaming.
But unlike our Ahab, poor Quint never wins the support of his colleagues. He ends up as shark chum, while his crew survives. These Ahab wannabes do get more lines than the real captain, who's surprisingly absent from much of Moby Dick, but our Captain Ahab is bigger than the cetacean he chases. Now, there have been men of vision who recognize this. The largest, perhaps, was Orson Welles, who turned Moby Dick into theater and grabbed the part of Ahab for himself. Welles's Moby Dick Rehearsed is probably not the best-known play, and the performance Welles played in is largely lost. But we Ahabophiles give Welles the nod for being faithful to the master.
You see an old man cut down to the stump, leaning on a shivered lance, propped on a lonely foot. You see me strained, half-stranded, as ropes that tow dismasted frigates in a gale. But ere I'll break, you'll hear me crack. Till you hear that, no Ahab's hawser tows his purpose yet.
Did you get that? Ahab's hawser tows his purpose yet. Okay, he's not the easiest guy to understand, but it's that dense Shakespearean language that distinguishes him from the mere mortals he has to ship with. Actor Seth Dewar says it took him a while to be seduced by Ahab.
I thought he was a complete psychopath when I first started looking at this.
Seth Dewar plays Ahab in the current touring production of Moby Dick Rehearsed by a New York-based troupe called The Acting Company.
Pondering all this, the palsied universe lies white before us like a leper. And of whiteness, all of whiteness, the albino whale has been my symbol. Do you wonder at my fiery hunt?
Dewar says that, like the rest of us, he got past Ahab's veneer of craziness, and he found a man of surprising talents, a man destined for greatness.
Very good at his job and what he does, and people have a very high opinion of him and his ability in his profession. And then this one event defines who he is, this one tragic thing that occurs right before the play starts.
Ahab is successful, but he's tortured. He thinks bigger than those around him. He wants to get beyond what he calls the mask and find reality or something. If you ask Professor Mary Burkaw Edwards, who also works at Connecticut's Mystic Seaport Museum, she says Ahab's deeper tragedy is that even he struggles to understand just why he's doing what he's doing.
Is Ahab Ahab? Is it I, God, or who that lifts this arm? I mean, he's really questioning who's the one who's pushing him on. What is it? What nameless, inscrutable, unearthly thing is it? What cozening, hidden lord and master and cruel, remorseless empire commands me? You know, he looks at himself and tries to figure out about himself what's driving him. And yeah, Ahab is his own worst enemy.
Maybe Ahab was just ahead of his time. Corporate groups have come to Mystic Seaport, and they've asked for leadership seminars based on Captain Ahab. And is it any wonder? Ahab succeeds in getting a bunch of boozy seamen like us behind him in his suicidal mission. There is no mutiny on the Pequod. Ahab is no Captain Bligh. Ahab is every leader of every country who asks the population to trust him, follow him, wherever. And that's why I think his time has finally come around again. There he is again on the quarterdeck. Ahab for president.
When he's on solid ground, Larry Abramson covers education for NPR.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.